This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Welcome to Community News, covering the towns of Webster, Dudley, Oxford, Douglas, Northbridge, Uxbridge, Whitensville, Upton, Milford, Mendon, and Blackstone. This program is sponsored by the Lions Clubs of Oxford and Uxbridge, and thanks to the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind for their ongoing support. In the next hour, we will be bringing you news from the Webster Times, Blackstone Valley Tribune, and the New Uxbridge Times. Today, we will be reading from the May 8th editions. This is Jennifer Antkowiak, along with David Jaffe. Northbridge Elementary students shine in handwriting contest. More than 600 students at Northbridge Elementary School showcased their writing skills this spring as part of a school-wide handwriting contest, marking the culmination of a highly successful instructional initiative focused on improving penmanship in the early grades. At the start of the school year, the school introduced the Handwriting Without Tears program in grades K through 2, pairing explicit instruction with daily guided practice to build strong handwriting foundations. Teachers participated in professional development at the beginning of the year to ensure consistent, high-quality implementation across classrooms. The program's success is rooted in its structured, developmentally appropriate approach, which aligns with the science of reading. Lessons incorporate multisensory strategies and hands-on tools that help students build fine motor skills, strengthen letter formation, and develop confidence in writing. One standout feature is Mat Man, a student favorite activity that uses wooden shapes and lines to construct a stick figure that contains all the building blocks of the shapes and lines required for proper letter formation. The initiative was led by preschool teacher Clarissa Flannery, who extended the program beyond the classroom. Throughout the year, she facilitated workshops for families, local preschool and daycare providers, and homeschool communities to support early literacy and handwriting readiness. In addition, teachers implemented a universal handwriting screener with each student to identify those who would benefit from targeted small group instruction, an added layer of support that contributed to the program's success. The year concluded with a school-wide handwriting contest where students selected and carefully copied short passages. Entries were judged on legibility, letter formation, spacing, capitalization, and punctuation. Participation was strong across all grade levels, and winners were announced at the district's Celebration of Learning and Belonging event on April 15th. The impact has been both measurable and meaningful. Compared to the previous school year, occupational therapy, OT screenings, were reduced by 50%, and occupational therapy evaluations saw a significant decrease. Additionally, nearly half of student support team referrals for fine motor weakness, 45%, were successfully addressed through classroom-based handwriting interventions without the need for formal OT services. As school leaders look ahead to next year, they hope to not only continue this program in preschool through grade 2, but begin to extend it systematically to the older grades, with a focus on proper cursive letter formation. Northbridge Elementary School continues to prioritize research-based practices that support early literacy and student success. The handwriting initiative highlights how intentional instruction and strong community engagement can lead to meaningful outcomes for students. Blackstone Valley Chamber welcomes Main Street Matters Tour to support local businesses. The Blackstone Valley Chamber of Commerce, BVCC, is excited to welcome the Main Street Matters Tour to support local Blackstone Valley businesses. This event will take place on Thursday, May 28th from 8:30 a.m. to 10 a.m. at the BVCC offices, located at 670 Linwood Ave, Suite 5 in Whitensville. This event is free and open to all local business owners and professionals. Main Street Matters Tour is a statewide initiative designed to bring small business owners together for meaningful conversations, collaboration, and insight into the issues impacting local communities. Presented by National Federation of Independent Business, NFIB, Retailers Association of Massachusetts, RAM, and the Massachusetts Restaurant Association, the MRA, this event provides an opportunity for attendees to engage directly with fellow business leaders, share challenges, and gain a deeper understanding of current legislative and economic issues facing small businesses across the Commonwealth. Attendees will have the opportunity to discuss key topics, including rising energy costs, health insurance premiums, Massachusetts tax rankings, labor mandates, and unemployment insurance concerns. This is a unique opportunity for business owners to come together, have their voices heard, and stay informed about the issues shaping our local and state business environment, said BVCC Executive Director Liz O'Neill. Those interested in attending are encouraged to pre-register in advance by visiting www.blackstonevalley.org/events. The mission of the Blackstone Valley Chamber of Commerce is to preserve and enhance the economic vitality of the Blackstone Valley by addressing the needs and concerns of businesses and providing leadership, support, and resources in connection with issues which impact commerce and quality of life in the Valley. Soder and McKenna nominate Karen Spencer of Uxbridge as Commonwealth Heroine. State Representatives Michael J. Soder and Joseph D. McKenna are proud to announce the nomination of Karen Spencer, Executive Director and Founder of Girls on the Run, GOTR, Worcester County, as a 2026 Commonwealth Heroine. This prestigious recognition, awarded by the Massachusetts Commission on the Status of Women, MCSW, honors women who have made extraordinary contributions to their communities and the Commonwealth through their leadership and volunteerism. The Commonwealth Heroine Award recognizes women who typically operate outside the spotlight but perform vital work to improve the lives of others. Each year, state legislators nominate one constituent who has demonstrated significant initiative and passion in areas such as education, healthcare, and community empowerment. Karen Spencer founded the Worcester County chapter of Girls on the Run in 2014 after seeking a program that would help her daughter and other young girls build confidence and resilience. Under her leadership, the organization has grown from a small pilot serving 69 girls at three sites into a county-wide staple. To date, the program has empowered thousands of participants across Worcester County, utilizing a curriculum that combines physical activity with social-emotional learning to help girls navigate life experiences. Karen Spencer is a true Commonwealth heroine whose leadership has taken a small pilot program to countywide staple, empowering more than 6,000 girls to build confidence, resilience, and healthy relationships, said McKenna. Her unwavering commitment and her sacrifices to keep the program going through the challenges of the COVID-19 pandemic embodies the very best of public service and makes her deserving of this honor. During the COVID-19 pandemic, Spencer's dedication was put to the ultimate test when schools closed and the program faced financial jeopardy. To ensure the organization could maintain its office in Whitensville and keep staff employed, she took a personal pay cut. She successfully pivoted to virtual lessons and fundraisers, ensuring that the girls, many of whom were facing unprecedented isolation, maintained access to the program's tools for self-awareness and emotional health. Karen's vision for Girls on the Run has transformed the lives of young women throughout our region by fostering an environment of grit and inclusion, said Soder. Her selfless leadership during the pandemic ensured that this vital resource remained available when our youth needed it most. It is an honor to recognize her tireless work and the lasting positive impact she continues to make on the families of Worcester County. the MCSW will be celebrating the 23rd Annual Commonwealth Heroines Class of 2026 on Wednesday, June 24th at the Massachusetts State House in the Gardner Auditorium from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Opening remarks will be made by MCSW Chairwoman Mary Dith Tewitt, followed by a special recognition of all honorees. A career of courage and public service. Kevin Barry inspires at Plummer Place. Members of the Dull Men's Club gathered at Plummer Place, home of the Northbridge Senior Center, for a memorable presentation by Kevin Barry, whose life story of courage, discipline, and public service left a lasting impression on all in attendance. Raised in Hopedale and a graduate of Hopedale High School and Worcester State University, Barry went on to serve in the United States Marine Corps before embarking on a distinguished career in law enforcement. He was selected for the Rhode Island State Police from a highly competitive pool of 4,300 applicants, competing for just 34 positions, graduating from the academy in 1994. Over the course of his career, Barry served in a variety of specialized roles, including narcotics, detective work, and as part of a high-level drug detection team targeting organized crime. Following the events of 9/11, he contributed to federal efforts as a member of the FBI's Joint Terrorism Task Force and trained at the FBI Academy in Quantico. Reflecting on his years in uniform, Barry noted, "My career, the days were long, but the years were short." Barry also shared personal insights and candid observations, emphasizing the importance of discipline, teamwork, and integrity. He spoke about the rigor of state police training in New England, the realities of working in high-pressure environments, and even the unique experience of working with a German Shepherd in the K-9 unit that required learning commands in German. Now retired from active law enforcement for 5 years, he has turned his focus to his own business, Picked to Serve. A lively discussion followed the presentation, with many expressing appreciation for Barry's willingness to share some very candid and thoughtful moments of his career. Events like these continue to enrich the Northbridge Senior Center's offerings, bringing meaningful experiences and fostering community connection. For more information about upcoming programs at Plummer Place or the Dull Men's Club, please contact Amy Cohen, Program and Volunteer Coordinator, at 508-234-2002. Annual St. Vincent de Paul Clothing Drive set for May 30th. The St. Vincent de Paul Annual Clothing Drive at St. Mary Church in Uxbridge will be held on Saturday, May 30th from 9 a.m. to noon in the church parking lot, 77 Mendon Street. We accept all worn, stained, but clean clothing and textiles to be recycled at all times in our bins. Proceeds from recycling the fabrics are returned to our conference to help meet local needs. Only on the day of the drive, if you wish to donate new or gently used infant and children's clothing or clothes that could benefit our veterans, please keep those items separate and our members will distribute them directly to those in need. If you have other good or usable clothing that you would like to repurpose rather than recycle, the following local agencies accept clothing to families and individuals in this area. We partner closely with these agencies: Hope's Thrift Closet in Whitensville, www.bvemergencyshelter.org/hopes-thrift-closet, and the Blessing Barn in Mendon, theblessingbarn.com, or Catholic Charities in Milford, ccworc.org. Currently, our Diocesan SVDP Conference does not have a store to accept clothing donations. We will announce when a new SVDP store opens in our area. On behalf of our friends in need, we are extremely grateful for your continued generous support. So please join us for the St. Vincent de Paul Annual Clothing Drive at St. Mary Church in Uxbridge, May 30th, 9 a.m. to noon in the church parking lot. God bless.
Hi, this is David Jaffe reading the Webster Times for Friday, May 8th, 2026. Oxford Community Center awarded $16,310 grant from Janet Mulzer Humanities Trust. The Oxford Community Center is pleased to announce it has been awarded a $16,300 grant from the Janet Mulzer Humanities Trust to support a wide range of free community-focused programs and events throughout the year. The grant will help fund free community events at Joslyn Park on the Oxford Town Common, the Summer Bandstand Concert Series, Creative Arts Classes for Youth and Adults, and the Macaroni Kid Awarding Youth Community Theater Program. In addition, funding from the Janet Mulzer Humanities Trust will support beloved seasonal events including Movies on Main, Scarecrows on the Common, the annual Holiday Lights Parade and Tree Lighting, and the fun Frost and Family Winter Festival in January. Staff, volunteers, and participants of the Oxford Community Center are deeply grateful for this generous support, which makes it possible to continue offering inclusive, family-friendly programming that strengthens community connections and enhances quality of life in Oxford. The Oxford Community Center's mission is to provide opportunities to enrich the quality of life of its citizens through recreational, cultural, and health-focused programming, said Community Center representatives. This mission would not be possible without the ongoing support of the Janet Mulzer Humanities Trust and other valued community partners. In addition to free community events, the Oxford Community Center offers year-round free programming for residents of all ages. Programs include a member-based fitness program featuring more than 20 weekly group fitness classes, pickleball, recreational youth athletic programs, craft and educational programs for preschool and elementary-age children, babysitting and CPS certification courses, and a summer activities program at Carbuncle Park. For more information about programs and activities, visit www.oxfordma.us/234/community-center. Dudley fifth graders grow plants for community. The fifth graders at Dudley Middle School recently participated in a project called From Our Hands to Your Hearts. The project was funded by the Dudley Charlton Educational Foundation and included the fifth graders planting and growing almost 300 baby spider plants. Students made observations as the plants grew, painted clay pots, wrote notes, and put all the items together and decorated gift bags. Some of the plants were delivered to family members, and more than 70 plants went to older adults in Dudley, delivered by the Meals on Wheels supported by Tri-Valley. The outpouring of appreciation from older community members was such a pleasant surprise. Some recipients wrote thank you notes, others sent emails through family members, and one wonderful recipient crocheted more than 40 mini thank you baskets that she filled with candy for the fifth graders. It's been amazing to see how such a small act of kindness has had a ripple effect throughout the community. Four fifth graders were also able to present the project to the Dudley Charlton School Committee on April 8th. The fifth grade team looks forward to continuing and expanding this project in the future to show just how important the older members of the community are to the town of Dudley. Community Baby Shower provides mothers in need with essential supplies. The United Church of Christ Federated launches its annual Community Baby Shower donation drive to benefit the Visitation House in Worcester. The drive, running until May 31st, is aimed at providing essential supplies to mothers, allowing them to keep their pregnancies and their babies. With many single mothers struggling to afford basic necessities, this initiative seeks to collect diapers, clothing, hygiene products, and other items to ensure mothers and children have a safe and healthy start. Community members are invited to drop off new and unopened items at the church office from Tuesday to Friday from 9:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. or Sunday morning before 1 p.m. The drive is specifically focusing on collecting high-need items, including crib sheets, diapers, clothes, newborn to 12 months, including sets, baby bassinets, baby security blankets, unscented baby wipes, baby grooming kits, Dreft detergent, feeding, formula, unopened, non-expired bottles, nipples, bibs, and burp cloths, hygiene, diaper rash cream, baby wash lotion, and shampoo, mom care packages, nursing pads, nipple cream, toiletries, shampoo, conditioner, lip balm, and body lotion. All donations will benefit the Visitation House in Worcester, Visitation House offers a program in Worcester County which provides women with unplanned pregnancies a path to cherish and sustain the life of their babies. They provide each woman a welcoming home and opportunities to develop the skills, confidence, and self-knowledge necessary to create a beautiful future for her and her baby. The house opened its doors on May 31st, 2005. Since that time, they've welcomed over 300 women and their children. The United Church of Christ Federated is located at 4 Church Street, across from Town Hall, 508-943-0061, UCCFEDWebster.org. Dudley's annual plant hop is set to bloom come rain or shine. Ready to start your vegetable or flower garden? If you are, visit our local growers and farmers at the 5th annual Dudley Grows Together Plant Hop. The Dudley Agricultural Advisory Commission is excited to announce the 5th annual Dudley Grows Together Plant Hop, taking place on Saturday, May 16th, from 9 a.m. to noon, rain or shine. The Plant Hop is a community event that gives local Dudley farmers and gardeners the opportunity to sell vegetable and flower seedlings and plants, no cannabis or hemp plants, directly from their locations throughout Dudley. To view the map of the locations, visit www.dudleyma.gov or www.dudleyfarmers.com. Girls on the Run, Worcester County will host a 5K event on May 17th. Girls on the Run, Worcester County will host its 5K event on Sunday, May 17th at Polar Park in Worcester. This spring season, Girls on the Run, Worcester County is supporting more girls than they ever have in a single season, reaching 986 girls throughout Worcester County. Girls on the Run is a physical, activity-based, positive youth development program that uses fun running games and dynamic discussions to teach life skills to girls in 3rd to 8th grade. During the 8 to 10-week program, girls participate in lessons that foster confidence, build peer connections, and encourage community service while they prepare for an end-of-season celebratory 5K event. Participation in the 5K event on May 17th is open to the public, and all proceeds from the event will benefit Girls on the Run, Worcester County. This season's 5K event is expected to bring together approximately 4,000 participants, including program participants, their family and friends, and community members. Registration is $55 or $65 for the day of registration and includes a finisher's medal. This event is not chip-timed, as Girls on the Run volunteer coaches coach their girls to run at their happy pace, and the goal is to cross the finish line. The doors will open at Polar Park at 8:30 a.m., and the run will begin at 10:30 a.m. on Sunday the 17th. Early arrival is suggested. For more information about the event, how to register, and volunteer opportunities, visit www.gotr-worc.org. About Girls on the Run. Based in Charlotte, North Carolina, Girls on the Run is a nonprofit organization with local councils in all 50 states. Founded in 1996 with 13 girls, Girls on the Run has now served over 2 million girls. Over the course of the program, girls in 3rd through 8th grade develop essential social, emotional, and physical skills to successfully navigate life experiences. The program culminates with the girls positively impacting their communities through a service project and being physically and emotionally prepared to complete a celebratory 5K event. With the largest 5K series by number of events in the world, Girls on the Run hosts more than 330 5Ks per year. Girls on the Run is included as a top research-based program in a social-emotional learning guide developed by researchers at Harvard University, and has been recognized by the National After School Association, NAA, as one of the most influential after-school programs. Girls on the Run is offered in more than 13,000 across the U.S. Visit council website to learn more to get involved in your community. Local singer brings the music of Paul McCartney to Oxford. Regional musician and singer Dan Kerouac will bring his program, The Music of McCartney, the world's most successful songwriter, to the Oxford Free Public Library on Tuesday, June 16th at 6 p.m. The program, delivered on piano and vocals, will explore the music of Paul McCartney from the Beatles years through Wings and into the 1980s, highlighting by informational commentary. Dan Kerouac is a 40-year veteran of the New England music scene and has appeared in two long-term Beatles tribute bands from 2000 to 2022. The program is free and open to the public. For more information, please call the library at 508 987 6003. For more information about the artist, search Dan Kerouac Music on Facebook. This program is sponsored by the Oxford Cultural Council, a local agency which is supported by the Massachusetts Cultural Council, a state agency. Historical Society to focus on Auburn's gentle giant. The Auburn Historical Society and Museum May meeting will feature the life and times of Dr. Richard Weigel, who for almost 60 years was an Auburn constant. He was the friendly neighborhood dentist, devoted family man with a penchant for public service, and a wide array of talents and interests. From his time as a member of the Auburn High School class of 1961 up to his retirement as superintendent of the Auburn Water District, plus all that came in between, including his wood carvings that can be seen at the Auburn Sportsman's Club, Dr. Weigel proudly called Auburn his home for almost all of his life. Come learn about the life of this gentle giant of Auburn as told through photos, original documents, and stories as shared by his daughter Michelle on Thursday, May 21st at 6:30 p.m. at the Auburn Sportsman's Club, 50 Elm Street, Auburn. This meeting is free and open to the public and is handicapped accessible. Friends of the Gladys E. Kelly Library to hold book sale May 14th to the 16th. Summer is just around the corner. Time to stock up on your summer books. The Friends of the Gladys E. Kelly Book Sale will be held Thursday, May 14th from 9 a.m. until 8 p.m., Friday, May 15th from 9 a.m. until 1 p.m., and Saturday, May 16th from 9 a.m. until noon. You will find a wonderful selection of adult and children's books, paperback 50 cents, hard copy $1, coffee table books $5, and a bag of books for only $5. Also for sale, games, jigsaw puzzles, CDs, and DVDs. So come to the Gladys E. Kelly Library Book Sale and pick up bargains for summer fun. Editorial, a lesson in loyalty, a moment of unity. There are moments in a school year that go beyond academics, beyond schedules and routines, and remind us what education is truly about. The recent Loyalty Day celebration at All Saints Academy was one of those moments. In a time when the word community can sometimes feel abstract, this event made it tangible. Students, veterans, educators, and local residents gathered not for a lesson in a textbook, but for something far more lasting, a shared understanding of service, sacrifice, and gratitude. Loyalty Day itself is a national observation, but its meaning comes alive only when it's brought into local spaces like this one. At All Saints Academy, that meaning was not simply explained, it was lived. From the opening prayer to the final blessing, each part of the ceremony reflected a careful intention to honor those who have served while helping young people understand why that service matters. What stands out most is not any single moment, but the way the entire program was shaped around participation. Students were not passive observers. They led the Pledge of Allegiance. They shared poetry rooted in their own voices. They created and presented flowers, each color tied to a deeper value, courage, purity, trust. These are not small gestures. They are formative experiences that teach lessons no worksheet could ever. For the veterans in attendance, the event was clearly meaningful, but for the students, it may prove even more significant over time. When young people are given the opportunity to look directly at those who have served and hear their stories, the idea of service becomes real. It gains weight. It becomes something to respect and, perhaps one day, something to emulate in their own way. Equally important is the tone of unity that carried through the day. In a world that often feels divided, especially in conversations about patriotism and national identity, this event struck a different chord. It focused not on differences, but on shared values. Freedom, responsibility, respect. These are ideals that can bring people together when they are approached with sincerity and care. Schools play a unique role in shaping how the next generation understands those values. Events like this remind us that education is not only about preparing students for careers, but about preparing them for citizenship. And that means fostering awareness, encouraging reflection, and creating opportunities for meaningful connection with the broader community. It's also worth noting that the role of tradition. Loyalty Day may not receive the same attention as other holidays, but its quiet presence offers something important. It invites reflection without spectacle. It asks for gratitude without expectation. In many ways, it is exactly the kind of observance that fits naturally into a school setting where learning and reflection go hand in hand. The success of this event speaks to the dedication of educators and organizers who made it possible. It also reflects a broader truth about our local communities. When schools open their doors and invite others in, something powerful happens. Generations connect. Stories are shared. Values are passed on. At its core, the Loyalty Day celebration at All Saints Academy was a reminder that respect for service is not something that should be reserved for a single day. It is something that can and should be woven into the fabric of everyday life. If there is a takeaway here, it's a simple one. Moments like this matter. They shape how young people see the world and their place in it. And in doing so, they help ensure that the values we hold dear are not only remembered, but carried forward. In the end, that may be the most meaningful form of loyalty of all.
And now for Lanterns Along Main Street. The quiet way our mothers shape us. There's a certain quiet to a Sunday morning in May that feels different from the rest of the year. Maybe it's the way the light comes in softer, or the way people seem to move a little slower, a little more thoughtfully. Or maybe it's just that we all know what the day is, even before we say it out loud. Mother's Day has a way of doing that. It doesn't need much announcement. It settles in gently, like a familiar song you haven't heard in a while, but still remember every word to. I was thinking the other day about how we tend to mark time in our lives. We remember the big things, of course, the graduations, the weddings, the first jobs. But when you really sit with it, it's often the smaller, quieter moments that come back the clearest. And more often than not, there's a mother somewhere in the middle of those memories. Not always in the foreground, mind you. Sometimes she's just off to the side, making sure everything is running the way it should. Packing lunches, folding laundry, reminding someone about an appointment, or standing in the doorway watching the whole thing unfold. It's funny how much of that work goes unnoticed at the time. Not unappreciated, exactly, just assumed. Like the sun coming up in the morning. You don't always stop to think about it because it's always been there. I can remember years ago coming home after a long day, the kind where nothing seemed to go right. You're tired, maybe a little irritated with the world, and not particularly good company. And there she is, asking how your day went, as if she's got all the time in the world to listen to the answer. And she means it. That's the part that sticks with you. There's a steadiness to mothers that's hard to put into words. Not all of them are the same, of course. Some are quiet, some are talkative, some are firm, some are gentle. But there's usually a thread that runs through all of them. A kind of quiet determination to make things better for the people they care about. You don't always see it when you're young. In fact, I'd say most of us miss it entirely at the time. We're too busy growing up, figuring things out, making our own mistakes. It's only later, when life has a chance to knock a few corners off us, that we start to understand what was really going on. I've come to believe that a lot of what we carry with us into adulthood, the good habits, the sense of right and wrong, the way we treat people, has roots that go back to those early days, to kitchens and living rooms and car rides where lessons were taught without ever feeling like lessons. And if you're lucky, those roots hold firm. Mother's Day, for all the cards and flowers and phone calls, isn't really about any of that, at least not entirely. Those things are nice and they matter, but they're more like symbols than anything else. What the day really does is give us a reason to pause, to notice, to think about the people who shaped us in ways we didn't always recognize at the time, to pick up the phone if we can, to say thank you, even if it feels a little overdue. And for those who can't make that call anymore, it's a day to remember, to sit with those memories and let them come as they are, sometimes warm, sometimes a little bittersweet. I don't think there's a right way to spend the day. Some folks gather with big family dinners, full tables and loud conversations. Others keep it quiet. Maybe a visit, maybe a walk, maybe just a moment to themselves. But however it's spent, there's something steady about it. Something that reminds us that no matter how much the world changes, some things remain constant. The care, the patience, the way someone showed up day after day, whether we noticed or not. You don't need a grand gesture to recognize that. Sometimes it's enough just to stop, look around, and understand, maybe a little better than we did before, what was given to us along the way. And if you happen to find yourself on Main Street this weekend, passing by the shops and the familiar faces, you might notice something else, too. A few more people carrying flowers, a few more smiles exchanged, a few more quiet moments tucked into an otherwise ordinary day. That's Mother's Day, I suppose. Not loud, not showy, just present, the way it's always been. And if you ask me, that feels about right. McMurray presented the Patrick Hughes Award for Social Justice. On May 3rd, Jean McMurray of Whitensville was honored at Project Bread's 58th Walk for Hunger with the Patrick Hughes Award for Social Justice, named for the late event founder. McMurray, who recently retired as CEO after three decades of leadership at the Worcester County Food Bank, is recognized for her unwavering commitment and longstanding partnership with Project Bread to end hunger across the Commonwealth. Patrick Hughes first created the Walk for Hunger in 1969 to inspire action, to make people think differently, and to demonstrate the power of a community united for a common purpose. Walks remain Project Bread's signature event, bringing together families, friends, and neighbors in a celebration of compassion and action. I am so humbled because Project Bread means so much to me, personally and professionally, says McMurray. This award recognizes 30 years of partnership in pursuit of our shared mission to end hunger. Project Bread has always focused on real, systemic solutions aimed at preventing hunger in the first place. While food pantries play a vital role in meeting immediate emergency needs, they are not meant to be a long-term solution. That's why I strongly support Project Bread's approach, working toward large-scale, lasting change to address the root causes of hunger. It's a mission I've put my whole heart and soul into. McMurray began her tenure at the Worcester County Food Bank more than 30 years ago, making it a priority to build relationships with Project Bread's team, a decision she describes as one of the best she ever made. Though she never met Walk for Hunger founder Patrick Hughes, McMurray worked closely with his wife, Marion Hughes, as a strategic consultant, deepening her connection to the values behind the award. In addition to her leadership at the food bank, McMurray has been serving on Project Bread's board of directors since January 2007, becoming board emeritus in 2023. She also played a critical role in the launch of the statewide Make Hunger History Coalition, a collective campaign to ensure that all 6.9 million Massachusetts residents have reliable access to food, and that Massachusetts becomes the first state to permanently end hunger. Jean is a selfless advocate and leader who has spent a lifetime improving her community and our Commonwealth, shares Aaron McAleer, CEO of Project Bread. Having run a food bank for over 30 years, she knows all too well the acute needs that cause food insecurity, a health crisis, a lost job, as well as many more for whom hunger is a chronic issue because they do not have enough money to afford food. In my very first conversation with Jean, I was struck by her conviction that food pantries are a symptom of a broken system, not the solution. She has been a fierce advocate for big, bold, and sustainable solutions to revamp the system. We are proud to honor her contributions and recognize the incredible and lasting impact she has had. Although she recently retired from the Worcester County Food Bank, McMurray remains active as a member of the Make Hunger History Coalition Advisory Council. Her days are filled with early morning mass, visits to her mother, daily 3-mile walks, time with friends and family, reading, planning trips, and volunteering in her community. Hunger is an issue of social justice, and these things take time, said McMurray. What gives me hope are the people who continue to keep the issue front and center, smart, dedicated champions working harder than ever. When we look back at how far we've come, it gives us the strength to move forward and continue the great work being done alongside like-minded organizations. That's what the Walk for Hunger is all about. On Sunday, May 3rd, the Walk for Hunger was gathered on the Boston Common to walk a fully accessible 3-mile loop. Others participated virtually from their own neighborhoods, and together they raised more than $1 million to support Project Bread's proven statewide programs that expand access to nutritious food for children and families facing food insecurity. People experiencing food insecurity should call Project Bread's Food Source Hotline at 1-800-645-8333, which provides confidential, free assistance getting connected to a variety of food resources in 180 languages and for the hearing impaired. Counselors can pre-screen families and help them to apply for SNAP. Learn more at projectbread.org/get-help. News from Plummer Place, home of the Northbridge Senior Center. The following events will take place at Plummer Place, home of the Northbridge Senior Center, located at 20 Highland Street in Whitensville. Our telephone number is 508-234-2002, and Northbridge residents have priority for all programming and events. On Tuesday, May 19th, from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m., Radio Turns 100, the sound that shaped our lives. From crackling early broadcasts to the voices Boston grew up with, this program brings a full century of radio to life. Join us for an engaging journey through time. This program is designed to entertain, inform, and stir memories with Mike Morin, presenter and a crowd favorite at Plummer Place. Sign up in the main office. Wednesday, May 20th, 1 p.m. to 2 p.m., Confidence, Caution, and Control, Three Keys to Staying Steady on Your Feet. Join us for an informative discussion about easy, practical ways to reduce your risk of falls and stay active and independent at home. This program will be led by a nurse, physical therapist, and an occupational therapist who will share helpful insights about how vision, memory, home environment, medication, strength, and balance can all affect fall risk. Together, we will explore simple strategies that can help you stay safer and more confident in your daily activities. We will also discuss how small changes can make a big difference in preventing future falls. Sponsored and presented by our friends at Seraphic Springs Healthcare, sign up in the main office. Thursday, May 21st, from 1:30 p.m. to 2:30 p.m., Jimmy Ragtag O'Neill Concert. Oldies, sing-along, and fun. When Jimmy Ragtag is in the house, it's like turning on a vintage broadcast set and letting the past play through the speakers. The songs everybody knows bring back fond memories. It's amazing how everyone remembers the words to the songs we all grew up with and love. Sign up in the main office. And Wednesday, May 27th, 1 p.m. to 2 p.m., The Art of Cats. Cats have long captivated us, going beyond their role as mere pets, to become powerful symbols and icons in art, literature, and more. From ancient civilizations to modern society, the allure of cats has left a mark on our culture, inspiring countless works of creativity and fascination. Do you have a story to tell about a cat? We hope you can join us for this wonderful program. Sign up in the main office. Again, that address is 20 Highland Street in Whitensville. Please give us a call for more information at 508-234-2002. Uxbridge to launch 300th anniversary celebrations. bonfire set for June 27th. The Uxbridge 300th Committee is inviting the community to come together in celebration as it kicks off a year-long lead-up to the town's tricentennial with a festive bonfire event on Friday, June 27th, marking Uxbridge's 299th birthday. The celebration will take place from 4 to 10 p.m. at the Uxbridge Soccer Fields off Sutton Street and is being held in partnership with the Uxbridge Youth Soccer League, highlighting the strong spirit of collaboration and community pride that defines the town. Residents are encouraged to follow the Uxbridge 300th Committee on social media and visit its website for the latest updates and event details at www.uxbridge-ma.gov/300-anniversary-committee.
St. Joseph school students embark on a memorable Washington, D.C. journey. During April Vacation Week, students in grades 7 and 8 from St. Joseph's School embarked on an enriching and faith-filled trip to Washington, D.C., combining history, culture, and fellowship into a truly unforgettable experience. The group gathered in the early morning hours on Monday, April 20th, meeting at the school at 4:30 a.m. before departing by coach at 5 a.m. for the nation's capital. Upon arrival, students immediately immersed themselves in American history with a visit to Arlington National Cemetery, where they observed the solemn tomb of the unknown soldier and the changing of the guard. The day continued with its visits to iconic memorials, including the Lincoln Memorial, Vietnam Veterans Memorial, and Korean War Veterans Memorial. Tuesday offered a meaningful blend of civic and spiritual experiences. Students toured the grounds of the United States Capitol and visited the magnificent Basilica of the National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception. A highlight of the trip was Mass at the St. John Paul II National Shrine, where Headmaster Father Richard Poltek served as a concelebrant. Following Mass, students were warmly greeted by Sister Veritas Green of the Sisters of Our Lady of Mercy, who presented each student with a Divine Mercy prayer card featuring the image revealed to St. Faustina Kowalska. She then spent time speaking with the students about the message and significance of Divine Mercy, offering a meaningful moment of reflection. The afternoon included a visit to the National Museum of African American History and Culture, along with the photo stops at the White House and the Washington Monument. Students concluded the day by visiting additional memorials honoring Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Franklin D. Roosevelt, and Thomas Jefferson. Wednesday's itinerary continued to bring history to life. Students visited Ford's Theater, gaining insight into the life and legacy of President Abraham Lincoln. The group then traveled to Virginia to explore the Stephen F. Udvar-Hazy Center, part of the Smithsonian Institution. This stop proved to be a favorite among students, many of whom enthusiastically participated in flight simulators and explored historic aircraft. Another highlight was the National Museum of the United States Army, where hands-on STEM activities engaged students in interactive learning. The day concluded with visits to the Pentagon Memorial and the John F. Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts. While visiting the Kennedy Center's terrace, students were treated to a breathtaking sunset overlooking the city. With sweeping views of Washington, D.C. as their backdrop, students captured memorable photos, taking in the beauty of the nation's capital in a truly special moment of reflection and joy. On the final day, students visited the People's House, an interactive museum experience focused on the White House, where many enjoyed stepping inside a full-scale replica of the Oval Office. The group also toured the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum. While there, several students had the extraordinary opportunity to meet and listen to Holocaust survivor Rose Helene Spirogin, who shared her story as a young Jewish girl in France during World War II. After her mother was arrested and deported to Auschwitz, Rose Helene fled Nazi-occupied Paris with her grandmother and survived the war in hiding, enduring fear, separation, and uncertainty at a very young age. Her powerful testimony brought to life in a deeply personal way and left a lasting impression on all who were present. The final Smithsonian stop was the Smithsonian National Museum of Natural History, providing students with a fascinating look at the natural world. Throughout the trip, students demonstrated curiosity, respect, and enthusiasm as they explored the rich tapestry and culture of the nation's capital. supported by the expertise of a professional tour guide provided by Travel Program, who offered meaningful historical context and engaging insights at each stop. Students were able to deepen their understanding of the people, places, and events that have shaped our nation. Among their favorite experiences were the Air and Space Museum's flight simulators, the interactive exhibits at the Museum of the United States Army, the engaging exhibits at the People's House, and the powerful and inspiring visit to the Lincoln Memorial. More than just an educational excursion, the trip fostered a strong sense of community and fellowship among students and chaperones. The experience was led by Principal Beth Boudreau, Headmaster Father Richard Pollack, and Grade 5 teacher Susan Galavan, whose leadership and dedication helped make the journey both meaningful and memorable. The Washington, D.C. trip is quickly becoming a valued and emerging tradition at St. Joseph's School. Now in its second offering, following the inaugural trip in 2023, the experience is extended to students who demonstrate strong character, responsibility, and a genuine desire to participate. More than just a trip, it's an opportunity earned through consistent effort and positive contributions to the school community. As the tradition continues to grow, it stands as a meaningful way to celebrate student commitment while providing an unforgettable educational and faith-filled experience. In other news, 1,100 Scotland World Cup fans to take school buses to stadium. A wave of Scotland supporters is set to roll into Foxborough this summer, not by car or commuter rail, but aboard a fleet of bright yellow school buses. The unusual travel plan, organized by members of the Tartan Army, Scotland's national soccer team fan base, emerged from a simple problem: getting to the World Cup matches without breaking the bank. For thousands of Scottish fans, Boston was simply too expensive to stay in. They turned to Providence, where the cost of accommodation was more feasible. Airbnb there was a lot cheaper than we were getting price-wise in Boston as well, so we booked that, Tartan Army member Greg Cowan said. And lo and behold, it turns out there have been thousands of Scotland fans who had already booked to stay in Providence. As more supporters booked their Providence days, Cowan, 40, launched a WhatsApp group, the Providence Tartan Army, to keep everyone connected. Soon, it ballooned into a central hub for organizing travel, events, and logistics. The group had around 1,000 members as of last week, he said. It would ultimately spark the unique transportation idea. With match days falling on dates when school buses were available, organizers began making calls. Soon, what started as a throwaway suggestion became a full-scale operation. More than 20 buses booked, with more room for 1,100 fans. Yellow school buses is what it's all about, Cowan said. The appeal is largely financial. While official shuttle buses to the stadium run at $95 per person, the fan-organized buses cost roughly $47. It's literally double what we're paying, Cowan said of the alternative before quipping, "No extortion from the Tartan Army." The buses may lack the comforts of modern coaches, seating is tight, and amenities are minimal, but for many supporters, that's part of the charm. Size-wise, I don't know what they're like inside. Maybe a few Scots struggling to keep their knees out of somebody else, Cowan said with a laugh. But it'll definitely be fine. We've plenty of beer. I don't think we'll even realize that we're on these school buses. The journey itself will be memorable as the matches. Fans planted apart hours before kickoff, giving themselves time to tailgate and soak in the pregame atmosphere. Behind the scenes, Tartan Army organizers have also worked to keep additional costs down. Parking, often a major expense during large events, was negotiated at a reduced rate through local connections in Foxborough. It's been a great team effort, Cowan said. Everybody's just mucked in. The sense of collaboration extends beyond transportation. Between matches, fans are planning trips to New York, riverboat cruises, and nights out across Providence and Boston. A march through Providence on June 18th, complete with traditional Scottish music and dress, is also in the works, led by the Rhode Island Highlanders Pipe Band, and expected to draw thousands. There are also plans to give back to the community hosting them. Organizers are raising funds for Hasbro Children's Hospital, with hopes of donating several thousand dollars during this day. We'll leave a great legacy up there, Cowan said. Rhode Island will be pleased that we've done what we've done. Still, the rapid influx of visitors hasn't been without complications. Some fans have faced canceled reservations and rising accommodation costs as demand surged. A lot of people ended up having their bookings canceled, Cowan said. Then they were having to rebook and the prices doubled. Still, enthusiasm remains high. For many, this World Cup represents a long-awaited return. Scotland's last appearance came in 1998, when Cowan was just 12 years old. I can remember watching it at school, he said, and since then I've just loved it. Nearly three decades later, that passion is carrying thousands of fans across the Atlantic and onto a caravan of yellow school buses bound for Foxborough. When everybody's singing, there's no better place to be, he said. It just sends shivers down your spine. If you're bummed out about the war, gas prices, the economy, housing, health care, the commander-in-chief, or all of the above, have faith and optimism. We seek happiness in these Boston photographs, moments captured in a fraction of a second. They remind us all we can find joy in different ways. As Americans, we are all pursuing happiness. It's written in the Declaration of Independence. But here's the catch. That historic document promises nothing about the actual attainment of happiness. Finding happiness seems harder these days. It may be fleeting, but the good folks pictured in these photographs reveal their mindset, which might even offer some clues to the rest of us. Gladys Merline, a model, dancer, and podcaster, says happiness comes from within. I'm so happy because I've decided I am the source of happiness, she says at the recent Wake Up the Earth Festival in Jamaica Plain. I think we are all super unhappy simply because we don't realize how much control we have over these experiences, and we're very separated. Separation is the root of our fear, of course. So I think it starts with realizing just how much power we have within. To be happy, make every experience just feel divine. Giovanni Parlara couldn't be happier as he takes his bride, Rixie Fuentes, for a walk in the Boston Public Garden. The lush greens of the willows are soothing. An oasis in a busy city. He has just married the woman of his dreams. Finally, she's my wife. I met her at church 7, 8 years ago. His opening line? I started talking, oh, you look lovely today. Why can't people always be as happy as on their wedding day? That's a tough question. It's mostly because there's a lot of stress. Yeah, more so than in the past, Padera says. He also blames Boston's worsening traffic woes. I think traffic makes people give out their own stress. Just getting around town has gotten tougher. Politics could be part of it too, he says. At the Wake Up the Earth celebration, kids slide down a cardboard-covered hill, either on their butts or potato burlap sacks. Visually, it could be 1967. No kid has a cell phone in their hand. Maybe the sliding precludes it. Maybe they're discovering this is better than a video game. The parents hang out mostly on top of the hill with their friends and their cell phones. The message here is left unsaid. Amy Riffler beams as she salsa dances with friends. For her, dancing is happiness. I think people are isolated and lonely. More and more things force us into our own worlds. We're tribal people. We want to be out. We want to be moving with our community. Moya Ellingbo, 17, of the Hyde Square Task Force, performs a Puerto Rican folk dance nearby. I'm very happy, especially here, she says. I just like being out in the open and not being cooped up. That's something that is very enlightening to me. Senator Ed Markey calls himself a happy warrior after speaking at a sun-drenched May Day rally in East Boston. I try my best to keep my spirits at the highest level that they've ever been at. It's the hardest I've ever fought because Trump is assaulting everything that made it possible for me, as the son of a truck driver, to become who I've become, says the former representative from Malden. August Martin, 4, of North Reading, fancies himself as a butterfly. His aunt, Karina, says watching him at the Earth Festival is rewarding. I'm happy because there's so much joy here and so much life. He's living in the moment, and he's a butterfly. Can't get better than that. Zafira Patino, co-founder of Spontaneous Celebrations, the festival's presenter, says seeing so many happy people together gives her joy. My recommendation is to get involved with the community. It's the only place we can be equal as people and relate to each other. We can heal, we can grow, we can enjoy, and celebrate the communal spaces as our refuge. This community news program is a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you'd like a hard copy of our program, schedule either in large print or braille, please call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. I'm David Jaffe, along with Jennifer and Kowiak. Thank you for listening.
Would you like to hear news from Shrewsbury, Northborough, Southborough, and Westborough that you're not likely to hear on commercial television or radio? Then tune in to Audio Journal every Tuesday at 4 p.m.